Chapter 26. Ron was told to assemble with the other inductees at 7 a.m. He decided to walk up to the place where the bus would bring them to Newark. No one said anything special to him about the way things would go, and he was feeling better for the lack of information. His fear had disappeared during his sleep, and he decided that he wanted them to take him. At least he would be acceptable to someone. He couldn't face trying to get out of like some misfit. What if a lot of guys did hide out in colleges? That wasn't his reason for going back to school. A determined calm was inside him. His voices spoke with soft advice. If your country needs you, you have an obligation to go. That's why we're free, and that's the only way for us to stay that way. If it was different, the government wouldn't spend all this money training guys to be soldiers. Ron thought about his high school history books, the picture of Douglas MacArthur wading ashore with his sunglasses and leathery tan face rose up in back of his eyes. Then it shifted, became a photo of a mushroom cloud that always appeared on one of the back pages as portent of the future. His mind shifted again. It was back to Patan on the $1 Million movie. John Wayne and Anthony Quinn led a charge with their machine guns blazing. He had reenacted the scenes in his bedroom when he was a little boy, throwing himself across his bed, holding his baseball bat while he did tumbles and came up shooting. He would get hit in the shoulder and fling himself back on the bed and then come up firing. But then he heard Dylan's voice singing Masters of War in his head. He tried to shake it from inside of him by walking faster. He fingered the brown manila envelope that held the letters about his knees. It always went back to football. The first day of freshman practice, when he'd ran faster than anyone even close to his size, and hit the blocking dummies with a vengeful pop that turned his coaches' heads. He was immediately moved up to the junior varsity. He squinted when he saw himself bouncing off some guy's hip in a full extension attempt to make a tackle. He hit the ground, heard his knee crack like a walnut. The next year of trying to play ball in between the doctor's draining of his knee every couple weeks, he saw himself spread out on the table with his pants around his ankles. The doctor was a mousy man with glasses. He rubbed alcohol on his leg. Is this going to hurt? You'll feel the needle break the skin, but after that, the pain will be minimal. When the doctor took out the syringe, Ron bolted upright. It was at least 7 inches long. He'd never imagined a needle was that big. Wait a minute. You're going to drill that into my knee? We're going between the plates of your kneecap. Under them is a sac that's swollen up with fluid. We're going to drain it. Ron began to sweat. He lay back on the table and stared at the ceiling. The doctor stood over him and rubbed his leg with a reassuring smile. Now you've got to relax so that the needle has a smooth path. Ron panicked. How the fuck was he supposed to relax? He looked for his mother. She crept into the corner and wasn't watching. That was reassuring. He tried to relax. He told himself that he wouldn't think about what this guy was going to do to him, and then it would be over. When the needle entered, a scream burst out of him. The doctor looked down with calm annoyance. You're not making this any easier. He pressed on the needle and shoved it through. The doctor looked at the vial connected to the end of the syringe. It wasn't filling up with anything but blood. He missed the sac and would have to try again. He withdrew the needle and looked down at his patient. Ron's eyes were glassy. Now you've got to relax so that you can find the sac. You mean you're not through yet? It's a very narrow shaft, and when you tighten the muscles in your leg, you constrict it even more. The pain in his leg wouldn't go away. He clenched his fist and told himself to relax. Ron stared up at the way hair curled out of the doctor's nostrils. The burning pain hit him again. He didn't scream. The needle was in, and the vials began filling up rapidly. There were 8 of them that Ron counted. Now he was able to tolerate the shaft being stuck in his knee. When Ron saw that the 8th vial had stopped filling, he smiled. It was over, he thought. Then the doctor said, "Now we're going to milk the bursar." He pressed his thumbs down on the area around the needle. Ron's brain became a fireworks display, and tears rolled down his cheeks. When the doctor took the needle out, the knee felt like it was still in there. He couldn't bend it. "That will go away in a few hours," said the doctor. Ron stopped counting after the 20th time the procedure had been repeated. Everybody agreed that he needed surgery. The orthopedic surgeon said that the knee should have been cut a year ago. There was damage that was caused by re-injury and the constant draining. He told him that the reason the knee kept filling up with fluid was torn cartilage. "Then, if I have the operation, it will be like it was before?" "Probably not," said the surgeon. "Ron, your knee won't ever be 100% again, and you've got to learn to live with that." When he was alone in the hospital, he cried. "I'm crippled," he said into his pillow. He saw images of himself hurling through the air and running with a joyous abandon, and told himself like nothing would ever be the same. His mind shifted to the day of the operation. In the recovery room, he told the nurse to go fuck yourself when she tried to wake him up. Then there was a pain and the pain shots and how they made him feel dreamy while he was still awake. He remembered trying to tighten the muscles in his thigh and finding that nothing responded. His knee had been split open and they'd taken things out of him. Nothing would ever be the same. He remembered his mother and Uncle Mike coming to see him after they'd brought him back to the room. From the way they looked at him, Ron knew he must look bad. "We brought you something to eat, and your Uncle Mike has a wonderful card for you," said Marjorie. Uncle Mike sat down on the edge of Ron's bed and squeezed his toes, saying, "How do you feel?" Ron screamed. It was an involuntary burst that came out before he had a chance to check himself. He tried to sit up and couldn't. The leg was bandaged from the ankle to the top of his thigh. He tried to rock himself up, and the split knee effect hit him square in the face. He screamed again. "Get off my bed, goddammit!" "Don't you dare talk to your uncle that way!" "Get him off my bed!" hollered Ron, and dropped back with his hands over his face. Letting them cut him open had been a mistake. It was only a year later when they had to do the same thing to the other knee. "It may have been a mistake," he told himself, "but it's all I got going for me today." He stood in the driveway waiting and thought it would be honorable if they didn't take him because of his knees. They were something he'd really suffered through, and had the scars to prove it. He wouldn't be a misfit like he'd been if they told him about the shrinks. Then the door opened and he was brought inside. Potential recruits were informed that transportation to the induction center would be arriving momentarily. The sergeant continued in a professionally dispassionate way with a thin grin. "You'll also be given extra tokens for return bus fare. Anyone who thinks they can cheat the Army in regard to his physical condition will be sadly mistaken. Those of you who seek to have psychiatric evaluation will be the last to leave the center. If you breeze through the preliminary examinations with no trouble, you can be expected to be on your way back home by 2 or 3 this afternoon." The sergeant called names from a list. Most of the names responded. Ron's "here" was so weak he felt he had to repeat himself immediately. He flushed when several heads turned in his direction. He'd spoken with a voice that sounded like it hadn't changed. He'd begun to make a fool of himself already. He got his seat on the bus and watched the passing panorama. The avenue resembled the huge bazaars and marketplaces he'd seen in documentaries. He liked its familiarity and told himself that part of this country's greatness was that its markets stretched on for miles. The bus passed the Lowe's Theater, and Ron flashed back on seeing Psycho there when he'd been a kid. He remembered the gales of screams that came out of the theater as they waited in the lobby for the next show. He was still unable to take a shower without periodically peeking around the corner of the curtain. Ron watched people walking freely along the downtown streets and felt like he'd been arrested again. He was unable to pull the buzzer cord and join them on the streets. The only remaining question was whether or not he'd be thrown back as a defective catch. The prospective inductees were met by Corporal Worsham. Service life had been good to the corporal, except that he was now stuck in this asshole city up north. But the Army had entrusted him with a large responsibility, and he'd be damned if he was going to fuck it up and find himself back in Saigon with his ass in a sling. He split the draftees into two large groups. The first group was sent to begin their physicals. Rom moved with the second group into a classroom for their intelligence testing. For the period of time during which you are stationed here, you are under the control of the U.S. Army. During the course of this day, you will be exposed to a battery of tests designed to determine your fitness for military service. Ron listened to the corporal, thinking that this guy must scrub himself with a wire brush every morning. His skin seemed clean to the point of being raw. Ron discovered a tattoo on Worsham's left forearm. It resembled a kind of ink pad stamp that was put on your hand at a dance and said, U.S. Army. These tests that you will be taking are cheat-proof. It would take a real imbecile to fail the intelligence test, and anyone who does fail will be taken off, retested, and then sent on for further special testing. Anyone who is sent off for special testing will probably have to remain overnight so that his test can be properly evaluated. Anyone turning in abnormal levels on the urine test will be kept overnight unless he can produce documented proof of a legitimate problem. Uncle Sam will always be fair to you, but he hates cheaters, and so do I. During the next 2 hours, Ron answered each of the questions as well as he was able to do. He thought that some of the questions, like being able to distinguish between a cow and a wrench, were incredibly stupid, but this was no place for complaints. Besides, the last thing Ron had to do was to be held over for special testing. Worsham, or his relief partner, stayed in the room during the entire testing period. 1 hour and 8 minutes into the test, Corporal Worsham saw the hand of a potential inductee in the second seat of the fourth row go up into the air. Ron stopped working and momentarily looked at the kid, who was sitting with his hand in the air like he was in school. Worsham gaped at the punk in the brown t-shirt, who was now a distraction to others, and moved in to handle the situation quietly and with dispatch. He leaned over and read the name of the questioner. "What's the problem, Henzel?" Worsham's face scrunched when he said the name. He'd already decided that this kid was trying to become a pain in the place where the sun don't shine. "The correct answer to this problem is unavailable on this test." Henzel showed Worsham the problem. The corporal stared at it blankly, seeming to be unable to comprehend the nature of the question. "You're telling me that this test is incorrect?" he said finally. Henzel launched into a description of the nature of the question and the mistake he thought the Army had made on this particular problem. I'll tell the U.S. Army that in your opinion, they are mistaken on this question. You should now resume working. But what do you want me to do about this question? Asked Henzel. Ron stopped working and watched the disturbance to his left. He thought about what a jerk-off Henzel must be to think that it made any difference at all. I'll have it checked. What else do you think I should do about it? Said Worsham. I could arrange to have you wait and point this matter out to the captain yourself. Would you like that? Henzel shook his head and went back to work. About 40 minutes later, the test ended. The group was led downstairs in a single file. They stripped and placed their belongings into wire baskets and were tagged. Ron felt stupid standing in his jockeys holding his manila envelope. He looked down with dismay at his stomach. It sloped and jiggled a little when he walked. He cursed the fact that he liked cake and sucked the thing in. That looked a lot better, but he wondered if people could tell that he was holding in his gut. The next 2 hours consisted of endless standing in line with arms folded across his chest. The only time Ron talked to anyone was when he said no to a kid who couldn't piss in the bottle and asked to borrow some of Ron's. The kid had been there a while, and they told him that he wasn't allowed to move on until he filled up the cup at least halfway. It took Ron less than 2 minutes to conjure up the needed waste, but he saw that a lot of guys were having problems. Ron liked the hearing test best of all. It was the way the earphones took away the constant noise of everybody talking and moving around. It was like being off by himself and fully alert at the same time. It was almost like being stoned. At the conclusion of his physical, Ron was examined by a doctor. Every potential inductee had to be examined individually. Those who wished to mention specific handicaps were assigned to a second examination. If you wished to have a second examination, you had to wait. Dr. William Stepfield was smoking a cigarette and wondering how many more he would have to check before he was finished when Ron entered his office. Ron tried to show Stepfield his letters, but was told he would have to wait for the specialty examination to present those. Ron was frustrated. Stepfield told him to take down his shorts. Ron felt sick when the doctor took hold of his testicles. Cough, said Stepfield. Ron coughed again. Ron hated it. Why did they grab you by the nuts and order you to do things? Again, please, said the doctor, adjusting his grip to another part of the scrotal sac. Ron coughed loudly in the doctor's face before he realized the defiance of what he was doing. He began to sweat. Okay, now bend over and spread your cheeks, the doctor said, putting on a finger cot. What? Ron was alarmed. Before he opened his asshole up to any weird government functionary, he was going to at least get an explanation. It's a rectal examination, said Stepfield, as he put his 150th fourth finger cot of the day on and hoped against hope that this kid learned how to keep his asshole clean. Ron did as he was told and concentrated on how the blood flowed into his face. Do you have a history of mental instability? No, said Ron, folding his arms more tightly across his chest. The idea of asking for a quick smoke was impractical. Then he was in the hall again, sitting on a wooden bench, in his underpants, holding his manila envelope. No one seemed to be taking notice of him. The orthopedic appointment was over almost before it began. The guy read the letters and said, "Do you have any pain?" "Sometimes." He told Round to lie down on the examining table. He twisted his knee and his ankle, and Ron yelped. The doctor said he was recommended that he be exempt from military service. Ron became confused by the sense of rejection and happiness. By the time he got his clothes back on, he was smiling. His life was going to be going on like it was before today. He was humming, along with the bubbly music that was playing inside of him. Corporal Worsham was seated at a desk outside the dressing room. He stared at Ron's papers from the back of his metal-type standard-issue desk. "You have been determined to be unfit for military service," he said sharply. "I know," said Ron, continuing to smile. "Your new draft card will be sent to you in the mail. Until then, you are to carry your old draft card with you at all times."